This is The Takeaway. I'm Melissa Harris-Perry. It's officially summer. And for many families, this means it's a great time to hop in the car and drive to that perfect vacation spot. But this year, there's one major hitch. And I am not talking about your teenager controlling the music during the drive. Earlier this month, average U.S. gas prices hit an all-time high of $5 a gallon, according to the latest data from AAA. Now, the national average has now dipped slightly below $5, but most people agree the gas is just too darn high. The Biden administration tried to offer a little bit of summer relief by releasing tens of millions of barrels of oil from the Strategic Petroleum Reserve this summer, but it had little effect. So on Monday, the president laid some blame at the doorstep of oil and gas companies.
My team is going to be sitting down with the CEOs of the major oil companies this week and try to get an explanation how they justify making $35 billion.
And this morning, the Biden administration announced it will ask Congress to suspend the federal gas tax for the next 3 months. Think of it as a gas tax holiday going into the busy summer travel season. It's a key political move. An ABC Ipsos poll from earlier this month found that gas prices will be extremely or very important to the midterm votes of 74% of the people they polled. Now, I can't tell you for sure what's going to be important in November, but one thing is certain, gas prices are important to many of you right now.
Hi, I'm Lara. I'm in California. I drive for a living, and these gas prices are 100% a tax on the poor. It's just not proportionate.
Hi, my name is Tammy. I'm calling from Mankato, Minnesota. And I just filled up the other day, and it was $51, almost $52. So yeah, quite an increase, and it really stinks.
This is David from Cleveland Heights, Ohio. I have a small hybrid car, and I just spent $50 to fill it up. On the other hand, compared to most other countries, we pay a lot less in gas, and we contribute a lot more towards global climate change. Maybe if it becomes more expensive, the politicians will lose out, but we might be better off in the long run.
Hi, this is Julia from Clayton, California. My message to politicians regarding the gas prices is, please do something quick, because it's ridiculous and it could be financial ruin for those of us that have to drive for work. I've had to choose between buying gas to go to work or food so that I can still get my mortgage and utilities paid. So hopefully you can get an end to this and bring prices down, or maybe get us all some free gas for the summer.
A little bit of free gas for the summer. As always, we thank you so much for calling us, and keep calling at 877-869-8253. Now, let's go ahead and get into this. I'm joined now by Joel Payne, CBS News political contributor and former aide to Hillary Clinton's 2016 presidential campaign. Welcome back to The Takeaway, Joel.
Good to be with you, Melissa.
Also with us is Denville Duncan, Associate Professor of Economics at the Paul H. O'Neill School of Public and Environmental Affairs at Indiana University. Thanks also for being here, Denville.
Thank you, Melissa.
All right. So, Denville, there's a lot of blame going around here. What are the main factors behind these gas prices at the moment?
The first, I would say, is just the pandemic, a big decline in demand for goods and services, but also a big drawback in the supply of goods and services as people were staying home. Demand came back roaring and supply just wasn't able to keep up. And so we saw massive increases in prices across the board, including fuel. So that's one factor. The second one is, you know, the idea that there is some restriction on supply of fuel, particularly in the U.S., where there are some concerns about environmental impacts and whether we can continue to explore new oil reserves. The last one is geopolitical conflict.
Okay, you can't see me right now, but I am making my screw face of skepticism because I suppose I'm not quite sure I believe that this is a supply and demand problem, Denville. Is this really about an insufficient supply, Or is this about kind of an opportunistic capacity to talk about this potential uncertain future where there might be a supply problem and crank up prices right now?
I do think there is some merit to the idea of demand and supply. If I'm pricing a contract, the contract that I'm pricing is not for today, it's for some future period. And so if to the extent that you have perceived future global disruptions, that is going to affect those prices today. Now, I think your skepticism is merited in the sense that how important are each of these factors? And I'd say these at least two of these, the war and just the recovery from the pandemic, playing an important role here.
Joel, we just heard from Denville this idea of a futures contract, which I understand is, you know, sort of a bit of technical economic language about genuinely having a contract in the future. But there's another future contract, and that is called the midterm elections. How important have gas prices kind of typically been in the kinds of choices that voters make in midterms, especially when we're talking about summer gas prices? Like, will this really hold as a key issue for November?
You know, Melissa, I'm sitting here listening to that conversation with you and Denville, and I think Denville is right, and you guys are circling on probably the right core factor issues that go into the gas prices. But it also just hits me that none of this matters to voters, because all they know is it used to cost me $43 to fill up, and now it costs me $75 to fill up. And the interesting thing about these gas prices are, they are one of the core components of what I call like the lived experience economy. The GDP prices don't matter. The unemployment rate doesn't matter. Those Bureau of Labor Statistics, they don't matter to people. The stock market is even secondary. It's the stuff that it's tangible that they can touch and feel every day. When you look at the midterms and when you look at President Biden and his allies, this is going to be the issue that's the albatross around the neck of the Democratic Party.
But gas prices being high is largely a problem because of how it cuts into, you know, sort of whatever your fixed pie is. But isn't the other possibility, instead of subsidizing gas, right, through a federal, you know, basically subsidizing it by removing the federal tax on it, what about bringing down some other kinds of prices? I don't know, maybe raising the minimum wage, trying to address questions around food prices or other commodities. Why go at gas?
When you talk about this kind of phenomenon of, well, shouldn't people kind of consider it as a part of the pie? I mean, they should, but they don't. Politics is a feeling. This kind of economic phenomenon we're going through right now, I've been calling it the bad vibes economy, because the vibes are all off and people kind of know it, you know, kind of very intuitively to themselves. They don't have to be kind of told that things are going well or they're not going well. They're all just going based off of, you know, what does their wallet feel? What does their checkbook feel? Yes, it's a fair point to say that you should drive wages up. But guess what? There are some statistics that would say wages are up. They're just not up fast enough or high enough. That's the tension in politics right now. The next test that the leadership of the Democratic Party is facing is in the November midterms. And right now, they are not set up for success, because this is something that they cannot get out of the minds of the American people.
I gotta say, Team Takeaway is annoyed with me every time I say this, but I keep saying, no, the gas prices aren't too high. They're too low. That, you know, and we heard this from one of our callers, David, who pointed out that on a global scale, we still pay less than, for example, if you're living in London and filling up your car. And after all, don't know if y'all have heard, but driving private vehicles really has an enormous effect on the environment. Is this an opportunity to actually maybe let the gas prices ride and reduce the incentive for driving, rather than using our federal tax power to incentivize driving?
So I think here you have kind of this trade-off, right? So we just heard the conversation about the political impact. And one thing I've observed over time is there seems to be something special about fuel and politics. You look at instances of riots or people protesting. I might just mention, I'm from Jamaica, and the only time I've seen a national protest was over price of fuel ever. And you see the same thing happening in Europe. People complained about prices and there was a protest in France and so on. So yes, you're right. You know, if you drive up the price of fuel, you're making it more expensive to rely on the internal combustion engine. And that's an incentive for people to switch over to, you know, alternative fuel vehicles, electric vehicles, hybrids, and so on. But a politician has to consider the impact of that strategy on the likelihood of, you know, winning an election. And as we just heard, the prospects are not good. So I while it is a way to, you know, kind of speed up the transition to alternative fuel vehicles, it's not clear to me that politically it would be, you know, the best move to make. You know, one of the main factors that go into the decision to buy an electric vehicle, for example, is a trade-off between the high upfront cost and the fuel savings over the life of the vehicle. And with fuel prices where they are right now, that payback is very high. And that is going to shorten the time it takes you to recover that initial investment. So we should, you know, theoretically speaking, you would expect to see a transition. And that's a good thing. But I think you really have to consider the political impact of such a move and also the distributional impacts of such a move, right? So there are lots of families, as you think about the budget, lots of families are capable of absorbing the additional cost of fuel. Many families are not, right? And so we want to be careful in how we try to advance these objectives so that we're not kind of making the distributional impact such that some people are paying a high price, whereas others are able to make that transition without, you know, kind of the same level of burden. So I'd be careful about saying, you know, we're going to just allow fuel prices to go through the roof simply because of the distributional impacts of such a move.
Also, perhaps the best evidence of the day that MHP should not be hired to be your political consultant. Denville Joel, we're going to take our foot off the gas for just a moment, but we'll be right back. This is The Takeaway.
Since WNYC's first broadcast in 1924, we've been dedicated to creating the kind of content we know the world needs. In addition to this award-winning reporting, your sponsorship also supports inspiring storytelling and extraordinary music that is free and accessible to all. To get in touch and find out more, visit sponsorship.wnyc.org.
We're back, and we're talking about the Biden administration's decision to use a federal gas tax holiday to provide consumers with some relief while gas prices remain high. Still with me are Joel Payne, CBS News political contributor, and Denville Duncan, economist from Indiana University. All right, I want to talk for a minute about this albatross, Joel, that you mentioned, that the gas prices will be an albatross around the neck of Democrats. And let's just take a listen for a moment to Ohio Republican Bill Johnson speaking on Fox News last week.
They control the rheostat on gas prices at the White House. It's not Vladimir Putin. It's not the oil companies. It's 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue that controls the rheostat. They can take gas prices up. They can bring gas prices down.
Ooh, was such a good moment. Use a word people don't quite know, but sounds like thermostat, and say that the president has full control. How effective is something like that?
Oh, listen, to the otherwise uninitiated, it can be very effective, Melissa. But as we all know, politics often has people making intellectually dishonest arguments. And I think that might be exhibit A, at least for this moment and the topic that we're talking about. One of the things that's also so frustrating about this is it is such an easily demagoguable issue. You can't trust your political opponents to carefully and responsibly manage a conversation like this when there's so much at stake, when they can use this really to hold leverage over you, to stifle your political agenda and to, you know, see political advantage long term. So no one has the patience in the moment. And obviously, your political opponents are not going to have the grace to not be intellectually dishonest when we're in a moment like this. To me, so much of this is about hustle and about kind of, there's a phrase in politics, get caught trying. And I think the president has to kind of get caught trying to solve the issues here. What is probably disturbing to some of his allies and some folks that maybe want the president to emote a little bit differently is they want him to show up as a fundamentally different president than he pitched himself to be to the American people. He pitched himself to be a president who, I'm going to get out of the way. I'm not going to be in your face every day. I'm not like that other guy, 45, who was all over the place and made it hard to have conversations about politics at dinner parties. Now is a moment where it requires a president to be front and center in your face at all times. And I do think that President Biden has leveled up, so to speak, his engagement in this issue in recent weeks. I think he has to hope that the American people feel like he is signaling the right type of hustle and the right type of urgency of the moment.
Denville, let's talk for a moment about this question. I heard Joel say, you know, the long term of 2024, and I kind of smiled because, you know, only for a political consultant is 2 years out constituting a long term. I want to remain for a moment on this question about the use of the federal government's capacity to tax or to offer tax relief as a way of thinking about, you know, signaling priorities. And so I so hear what you're saying about the ways that gas prices are particularly inelastic for those with the lowest incomes, with the most fixed incomes, right? That the most vulnerable are most harmed by a dramatic rise in a consumer item like gas and fuel. Is there a way to provide some relief to the most vulnerable while, again, not signaling that our primary interest is in ensuring that gas prices are low, but rather that households have enough?
Right. So so that's a good question. I would say the answer is yes, but it's difficult. And I think I'm an economist. I'm always going to talk about trade-offs. Mm-hmm. So what they're proposing is this gasoline tax holiday. And it's a very easy thing to do, right? Once you get over the politics, you know, at the stroke of a pen, you can just say, we're not going to collect the tax. And that is going to provide some relief to consumers, but it provides relief to every consumer, regardless of their capacity to absorb the higher fuel prices. So that would be one way to do it. My position is that I don't think the impact will be large enough, but as a signaling device, I suppose it would be, it wouldn't hurt, right? If you're thinking about it from a political perspective, it wouldn't hurt to say, well, we're going to signal that we're interested in your welfare. And one way to do that is to provide some tax relief. The alternative, or at least one alternative way of trying to assist, would be to use some type of rebate program where the benefit that you're offering to individuals is more targeted. So you might imagine something where a check is sent to someone if their income is below some level. That would be a more targeted approach. It would go to the people who are potentially hurting the most. The challenge, of course, is that it's going to be more expensive to administer such a program. And it probably would also take a little bit longer to get that rolled out. And so you have this kind of tension between what can I do that is going to target specific groups versus the speed at which I can get that benefit out to the people who need it. Those are, you know, broadly speaking, two ways that you could try to offer some help, but they differ in their costs of administration and the speed at which you could roll them out. And so you might expect, you know, the gas tax holiday is the easier one, and that probably is what we will end up doing. I do want to mention one thing, though. If we think back to the 70s when we had also an oil crisis and, you know, high prices, one thing that came out of that era was the corporate average fuel economy standards. So you were talking about environmental impacts and how might we leverage this moment to achieve those climate goals. And I think, you know, looking back to that era, seeing that high prices at that point kind of led to a shift toward trying to get vehicles that are more fuel efficient, which would then lower the amount of energy consumed, was somewhat a positive. We could always have a different conversation about whether, you know, the corporate average fuel economy standard is the way to achieve this goal. But I do think drawing on that era, you see that there is an opportunity here where policymakers, if they're serious about climate change, can try to use this moment as a way of advancing policies that long-term would have a big impact on climate policy.
Denville Duncan, Associate Professor of Economics at Indiana University, and Joel Payne, CBS News political contributor. Thank you both for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
All right, y'all, let's hear from more of you about this. How's the price at the pump treating you? And what do you want elected officials to do about it?
Hi, my name is Margie. I'm calling from Raleigh, North Carolina. I am very aware that the United States gas prices have been increasing dramatically. However, we still pay less than almost any other country in the world. I do think increased prices should help us decrease our reliance on gasoline and other non-renewable energy.
Hi, my name is Greg Keenan, calling from Stamford, Connecticut. And as far as gas prices are concerned, we should be sticking it to the gas companies. We should be conserving. We should be driving 55 miles an hour. So I'd like politicians to tell us to work as a group and conserve and drop gas usage by 30% and the price would drop.
My name is Jeannie Sanders and I'm in Dallas, Texas. And I don't really have a message for politicians. I have a message for ExxonMobil and BP and the companies that are making a fortune off of the prices being paid at the pump by citizens who are already being hit with high inflation prices in the grocery store and supply chain issues. That's what needs to happen.
My take is that the rising gas prices is largely a distraction from the bigger issue, which is we need to be funding better public transit within our cities and between cities, and we need an infrastructure that allows people to walk and bike so that we aren't dependent on fossil fuels in the first place. My name is Christian Frumelt. I'm calling from St. Louis, Missouri.
Thanks for calling. Our number is 877-869-8253. That's 877-8-MY-TAKE.